Well, listen to his description of the topography of Virginia, particularly the meeting of the passage of the Potomac through the Blue Ridge Mountains. The passage of the Potomac through the Blue Ridge is perhaps one of the most stupendous scenes in nature. You stand on a very high point of land. On your right comes up the Shenandoah, having ranged along the foot of the mountain 100 miles to seek a vent. On your left approaches the Potomac, in quest of a passage also. In the moment of their juncture, they rush together against the mountain, rend it asunder, and pass off to the sea. The piles of rock on each hand, but particularly on the Shenandoah, are the evident marks of their disruption and avulsion from the beds by the most powerful agents of nature. And here is a scene that draws us out of ourselves. We're overwhelmed by the power of natural forces. But he turns from that directly to the beautiful. And for Burke, the beautiful is, in contrast to the sublime, orderly. It's tranquil. It evokes from us an experience of spectatorial repose. It's gentle. It's caressing. And I quote, "But the distant finishing which nature has given to the picture is of a very different character. It is a true contrast to the foreground. It is as placid and delightful as that is wild and tremendous." And here he's playing up that imagery of beautiful and sublime, of powerful and gentle. "For the mountain being cloven asunder, she presents to your eye, through the cleft, a small catch of smooth blue horizon at an infinite distance in the plain country." Here is a wonderful sense of invitation to tranquil repose. It invites you, as it were, from the riot and tumult roaring around, to pass through the breach and participate in the calm below. And here we see Jefferson ranging not only from the strict classicism of Palladian order, symmetry, and elegance. And I should point out, Jefferson had incredible hostility to the Georgian architecture in Virginia and in the United States. He believed strictly in first Palladian, and then later, when he began to see it for himself in Europe, Roman architectural laws. At the same time, we see him embracing what will be the 19th century's romanticism, the notion of beautiful and sublime, as well as rational and orderly. And I think if we look over the mind of Jefferson, we have to be struck by this remarkable sense of broad-ranging intellect, bringing together a variety of different elements. Naturalism, rationalism, scientism, the beautiful, the sublime, the orderly. Fundamentally, then, what do we take from Jefferson's mind? We take a rationalist, a scientist, a naturalist, but more than anything, an eclectic. One who, some will say, was not a systematic thinker, but I would argue is in fact an artist, a man with vision rather than philosophy, a man who sees doctrines not as dead dogmas hanging over his head, but rather as living creeds with which he can fashion his own intellectual experience and that of his nation. And that's what we're going to do in our next lectures. We're going to see how Jefferson takes these elements of rationalism, of order, of naturalism, of moral sense, and applies them in creating the national identity of the American people. And he does so in words and language, because language is the medium within which Jefferson lives. So we're going to trace how this worldview is instantiated, first in Jefferson's actions in Virginia, in his famous documents, Summary View of the Rights of British America, in the Declaration of Independence, and finally, in the Notes on the State of Virginia. And then we'll see how this legacy becomes developed as Jefferson's thought turns to the left, as he begins to trace out the radical implications of these doctrines, formulating creeds which will inform not only the revolutionary period, but will also set up the lines of thought for 19th century Jacksonian democracy and egalitarianism.